yeah, my name is Sean Callahan, and I'm originally from Kentucky State, but I've been here for nearly 10 years now. I was supposed to be reading originally with the poet Ron Whitehead, who unfortunately wasn't able to come, but luckily for us, we do have Rebel Knives that's going to be following me, and I know that we're all very eager to hear him. Ron was very disappointed not to be able to come. He's a great man for the world of poetry. The first poem that I'm going to be reading tonight, Ron for years has been producing an event called the Insomniathicon in the States. It's a 24-hour festival of poetry and music. This year was his last year producing the event, and he asked me to write a poem. I was very honored that he chose it to open the festival. Not normally my style, but I enjoyed writing it, and I was very glad to hear that he read it, so I'll start with that. It's called The Rejoicing Response. I'm sending good thoughts to you that I packed as words on a page and folded into a boat which I've pushed out from Stony Gap trying to carry. Back along the Gulf Stream, sliding like elbers down past the Azores and curling around the Caribbean islands, picking spices out of the foam. These spring winds beach them in spray and buffet them through the pine-coned clay mouths of the deep south before catching on the coattail of Appalachia, asleep in the geos. My thoughts descend after the thermals of the Cumberland Plateau over knobs of folded velvet and the tufted shoots of blue grass, where they wheel along the thigh of the great river, falling as dust, caught as crystals in the beams of the sun to drive through the soil of your garden to wait for the becoming of grass, waiting for the becoming of you on that grass where, like Kerouac wrote, God with forefinger pointed straight at you said, "Go moan for man." And in Ireland, I've also seen through the great towering thunderheads which belittle the mountains and their breakbody cliffs, sucking up the spray and fury of white-foamed Atlantic swells, shafts of sun, gases of light streaming forth, forefingers pointed down upon all the small people, all the small worlds. I've seen where a man has pointed his finger straight back and broken stone of unbelievable medieval towers and valleys of unimagined labor, saying, "Here I am, insignificant me in the wild. Insignificant me in the bosom of this nature, but significant me in the palm of this humanity. And although you were a ghost to me, a disembodied voice, a muted screen of greetings and feelings, a thin white page, a world of words, you were a pride of Kentucky to me, 3,500 miles from home, as much as horseflesh, as much as bourbon, as much as the landscape of singular knob hills, bluegrass, mountains, and rivers, that I've often said goodbye to from tiny airplane windows too thick for me to feel the heft of final Kentucky winds. And all that taught to you by the wondering rabbinic Bodhisattva Ginsberg about going, 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 going on, about seeking the new experience, the discovery, the exchange, the connection, the sympathetic, is no longer about the continent of North America. The world has become beat, and the beat of the world is the beat of us all. The beat of one heart no different from the beat of another 10,000 miles away. Changed by Che Guevara and his motorcycle in his swamps of leopards. Changed by the Dalai Lama and his pure compassion. Changed by Jack Kerouac, who showed us that change to experience, you just need to open your eyes. Changed by Allen Ginsberg, who is the king of man us all. Changed by Ron Whitehead and his dedication to the global renaissance of poetry. I saw it as I walked down by a quiet canal in Leiden, Holland, 8 years ago, 23 years of age, and saw two brothers with overburdened backpacks, one brother, autistic, following. Being shown the cities and towns and people of Europe, and what thoughts he must have been thinking with all this so different from the spaces of America, the gridded streets of homes so uniform, the sundown of America over wheat or mountains or skylines, skyscraper cities so different from the sundown of Europe. But sundown, the same as sundown. The beat of his heart there, the same as the beat of his heart here. And as I passed, I heard just two lines of a conversation that swelled the beat of my own heart with such joy that it leaked from the corners of my eyes. Do you want to go there? Yeah! Let's go there, was the rejoicing response. I saw it in a harmless email that I sent to a poet in Kentucky in which I wrote, "Hi, my name is Sean Callahan. I'm a poet from Kentucky living in Ireland." And you wrote back saying, send me poems. Come, read poems with me. The world is poetry. Come, let's speak the world. In the little biography that was after Rice, I mentioned that a lot of my work has to do with personal mythology. And I think sometimes people have a misconception of what maybe mythology is. Personally, to me, mythology is just a people's or a person's attempt to redefine the world so you can better understand it. My poetry has become my personal mythology because it is just my attempt to redefine the moments and feelings and experiences that I've had to make them something new. This next poem is based on my first memory, and it's called Rooster. I'm three. It's the beginning of a cold time, an early night time that makes the leaves thick. Bristle brush green trees behind the house, blocking the sprint of wind. It comes and talks to the corrugated barn, edifice of block, the big, shiniest ever. I hear them talking, wind whispering, barn whistling, but the house is safe, crouching behind a line of green wood smoke smell. My clothes are thick, giggling me, like I was a tire man on TV. I'm three. The chickens are grazing, little white cows with a quick nod, dipping for the sea. The colorful dark feather bird with a flappy skin head tucks his scratches in the grass, spreads his wings and hops. I laugh. He jumps closer. A damp dust smell comes in feather gusts, the noise becoming fear. He flits about my front with downy hollow fists alternating, a cacophony of muted sky sounds giving birth to startled shrieking. I don't hear the tender slight incision pop of spur through synthetic, slicing its grip of the zipper trail. I'm three, and the rooster wants to mark my face. I'm three. My father running, wrinkled eyes, blue clear running, leaving the pale flesh of newly split wood. I'm three, my neck twisting, to see the rooster's neck snap. I'm very lucky that was my first memory, because not too long before that, as I was learning to walk, I took a face plant into a fresh, steaming pile of cow shit. Now, while that might be funny, it would have been a lot harder to write about. This next poem is kind of inspired by my brother, who's the ultimate bullshit artist. He once got me when we were playing basketball on the Jesus fake, and to my ultimate shame, I actually looked. The Jesus! Huh? So this one's called Small God. We chase snow deeper into the woods, woods free of footlocks, past skeletal trees, strange arrows fletched in white, the crystal blue literature of fox prints on the pure page of the white wood. We were beyond our parents' wishes on the frozen highway of Stinky Creek, and our eyes shoveled all we knew aside for one glimpse of the undiscovered. The dead still, the still quiet, the quiet broken by the crack of feet. Our only sense of a boundary was the shore of the stream, the delicacy of white above water, and the crystal crust of mud under the lip. In the speckled forest, there was a thread of linen pinning a veil to the land. We designed roots and slowed our bones, sheltering snowflakes on our hats and limbs. We named the crows, and they named us Caw. We were Caw and Caw walking along the creek. He told me when the snow comes down, listen. It sounds like underwater when you squeeze your ears. It rumbles because snow eats noise. It purrs less than wind or ashes singing. He told me that the dark, rigid shapes under the clear cold were copperheads waiting for the thaw. I thought they were sticks too slow for the freeze. He told me that if I looked through the blue blur, I could see the diamond head and the glazed bowl of its eye. we knelt and praised the ice and the small god beneath. Caught still and estranged in inflection, our mouths were wide to warm the breathing. And out in the static bell of trees, through the stark black birded boughs was a muffled bell, a muted bull bellowing at two lips of color. The snow had eaten the farmer lost in a labyrinth of trunks, but his shotgun was sharp enough to break our bubble, to disengage feet and eyes. Oak, oak, pine, pine, crow, crow, swirling. A swift beating semaphore of wings splattering shadows on the fair forest floor. The trees, suddenly tremulous, we fled and massacred snow with booted feet. The scroll of fox pillaged. And through the cloud of ice, a copperhead eye softened and swelled with new vision. This one's called At Night and Dark. At night and dark we sit between horseshoe pits after food and drink under the chill moonlit sky, miles from the blood rush hum of the interstate, a month too early for the insect fairy fireflies of my flashlight tag youth, but populated by two tobacco eyes, pulsing red with the odd draw. You said you liked my world, a voice exhale of smoke stalking the night. You said, I like your world. The rural suburb struck clouds, speeding soundlessly, rolling tide-like across the field of stars set like crystal sand grains in Venus shells. A world of silhouette trees, demon birds in the bamboo leaf, grass-wet boundaries of domains in the midst of plots and houses, a world of voices in the dark. Bronze Age. There is a smell of earth from behind your neck that lives in the treetops of my nostrils. Rising solid, I could hammer it into plates of tin. Your thin neck curving over the odor of brown, moist earth and the vein of a furrowed field, cropping the foggy wisps of fine hairs. Like a peel of sod released, the softness of flesh is warming. It gives. Blanket bog. I want to lie down and let the blanket bog cover me, allowing heather and moss to collect in mud pools near my face, to be the next giant deer, having memory of my iron age and butter fat teeth. My extinction is my monument. Lay me down, a wounded skull in the hollow, set softly on a pillow of bog oak, on a bed of foreign wood forgotten. 15 feet above the glaciers, 2 feet below everything else. I lived for 8 years in Cork, in the real capital, and very proud to be an adopted Corkonian now, pure rebel, and a diplomat for the People's Republic of Cork.
Hey.
In exile. So the next few poems are inspired by Cork. Coal fire. Smoke. Not wood smoke, smoke. It was earth, not air smoke, tickling the visual of breeze, the grandfatherly twist of feathery beard. My nostrils were caved for its painting. Slight rain licked our lips, sprayed cheeks with hiccuping wind, and wove a gown of pearl beads on the trembling, moving river. We crossed the flowing glass on the brooch of a bridge, leaving the mineral smoke of the jumble-roofed hills behind us. And on the island of the city, you grabbed my small hand with your small hand, tilting your head while walking. In the glass of the opera house, our reflections trembled, moving by the opera house, they were singing by the river. Called tuning. The train journey takes me past the inception. Mud flaps at tide loss cover smooth the winds of water and moon. Tracks sinewed, cut like runs of snake bellies, leaving the silvery scales rippling through the trough channel. We thrummed the bridge, tuning from clack to zing, changing from this place to that, as a ship slips out on cobalt caps, collecting gulls and foam as passengers. The rails, worn slippery from steel on steel tenderness, glisten like smiles between the red rust sides and coarse ballast. And bending toward the city, I feel as worn and as smooth with my constant coming and going. I've been driven through the loam and shorn, with my leaving fanned out behind the train, tangled in the spikelets of grasses, kissing the surface of water. Coaxed from the slighted sheen and shadows of a bridge belly, they collect in foam, hitching to the harbor mouth, the break of land, and the undulating horizon. I was driving to work one day, it's still going on, it's the, a massive amount of road works and works and everything going on, and I was caught by a particular image. So this is based on that, it's called Bypass. They will take away a tract of land from your hillside, leaving a ribbon of blood-brown earth in its wake, quickly cauterized by asphalt and stitched with the white thread of human guidance. The floppy sides of your rises, retained by steel and concrete, chain link hangs like fishnet stockings, fastened by plate and bolt, tarting up and tightening down your nudity. We used to have cursive roads before cars, callousing our feet, brewing iron in our thighs. We followed the trails of animals, hoof and paw paths, or rivers gushing their water to the rushing womb of the sea. Our contours were bone and muscle. Moving was a negotiation that the slow lope of land and vegetation allowed. But now, I just wish the bypass was finished, because I have to be home by 6:30, and really, I just can't be late. Just one more of mine, and then one more that I'd like to read after that. But this is my most recent poem, and it still doesn't have a working title. But when I was writing it, I was struck by the realization that in the English language, we only have one word for tears. And I was thinking in my basic understanding of other languages, and I could be wrong, I couldn't think of any other words for tears. And I just found it amazing that in humankind's infinite curiosity and infinite search for knowledge and meaning, that this is just the one word that we needed for it. That I could be wrong, but that's the impression that it got to me. And on a personal note, this past year has been a very rough year, filled with a lot of sadness, especially for my wife. So I've written this poem for her. And I'd like to read it. We sat in the dunes with the sun diving in the sea, its fractured rays on the altitude of its waves, sundering the world into splinters of gleaming, burnished light. In your oblivious sorrow, you lay your head against my chest, nuzzling yourself into smallness, your instinct inching toward the cave of my arm. I was husband, lover, friend, father, brother, a vessel for your face, a vessel for your eyes, not wanting to see the world. Tears began to pool in the hollow at the corner of your eye, a small, salty lake threatening in tiny tidal sobs to breach the ridge of your nose. Sad over life, over death, over the inexplicable in between, no more joys hidden in the wisps of rustled dunes and the paddings of grass roots growing in sand. No more joys hidden in my desire to touch you often with my small, shuddering hands. A whole list of sudden joys lost. A whole list of sudden joys lost. Your sadness pacifies me, and it erodes me in its ebbs and in its flows. My heart shatters every day to be patched together again while I doze hastily and awkwardly, with contrasting pieces set side by side at conflicting angles, the circle wedged into the square half jammed in the triangle. I wake and it is broken again with the dawn of the day. My heart, it shatters every day in the waves of your sadness. And as I ready myself for the soft deluge to spread across the fabric of my jacket, each escaped tear becomes a sudden lens, reflecting the pale cloud of your face before it falls in on itself, mixing with the mesh. The soft pink of flesh near the pearl of your eye, revealed by the ebb, is a city lost to the sea, lost to the tide flow, the creep of water, the weep of sand, the brush of foam swelling the wet world, the flow throwing salt in your facial pores with a fluid plow, the flow that will inundate and saturate the shore, the flow that will surely be followed by ebb. I look down on you over the wiry hairs of my beard, where you have crushed yourself against my chest, falling in on yourself like a wave surprised to meet the land, falling in on yourself like a tear on a jacket. I'd just like to read one more, if I could. It's a poem by Ron Whitehead. As I said earlier, he was very disappointed not to be able to come over, so I said that I'd do this for him. It's called Tapping My Own Phone by Ron Whitehead, and I'll try to give as much energy as he would. I'm going straight. Bought myself a flat-top haircut so stiff I can carry a tray of martinis. Waiting on people, someone, to open up her purse and give me a tip, because I don't have a clue anymore as to what's going on. But I do know I'm one step ahead, tapping my own phone to hear myself talking with people who used to be my friends. Listening so I can correct myself before they do. And I've got a surveillance camera in my abandoned car across the street, watching myself, replaying the tape so I can see if I'm acting funny before they catch me doing something I shouldn't. Like yesterday, I spotted myself walking too fast, and I heard myself talking too loud. Yes, I've got the deep fear, paranoia, anxiety, despair, and suicide blues, but I'm making sure I don't do nothing else wrong, because I've done screwed up so many times, I cornered myself into a backstreet dead-end alley of paranoia, and every time I hear an airplane or a helicopter or a car door slam, I know the Secret Service, the FBI, and the IRS SWAT teams have finally arrived, because I published a poem by the President of the United States of America without his fully conscious permission. And I'm sure I haven't paid enough taxes, because I've got no income, yet somehow I keep on doing things like eating every once in a while and paying a light bill or two, but how do I do what they're going to ask? What's the source of your income, and how come you don't come to see us anymore? So yes, I've become a little jumpy, but I'm staying one step ahead, tapping my own phone, videotaping my every move, watching myself day and night, replaying the tapes, because I've got a bad, bad, bad case of the deep fear, paranoia, anxiety, despair, and suicide blues. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sean Cullen.